You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Well, Ron, I am so sorry that I have hotel room coffee for you tonight, but that's what you get because we're in a hotel in Long Beach, California.
Dr. Ron and Linda on the road.
On the road again.
So here we go. We are in Long Beach, and what do you think about this city, Lynn?
Well, I used to live in Long Beach many years ago. I used to live in Belmont Shores. It was the place that I moved when I moved out of my parents' homes at 18 years old. And had a wonderful time, a wonderful experience in this town. And my, has it changed?
You know, not Surf City, which is, I think, Huntington Beach, right? Right next door. But it is definitely a beach city. And we're here, and it's absolutely gorgeous, and it's warm. There's not a cloud in the sky. And the ocean, from what I could see, is blue. But I'll tell
kinda
you what.
Kind of grayish blue.
Yeah, you know, I'm not impressed.
Yeah, you know,
and I'm disappointed.
It's too bad. I haven't been here. I mean, I come here from time to time, but I haven't been here and stayed for a while. And what I'm seeing that's different here is just a really interesting, diverse crowd of people, but a lot of people walking around with very obvious mental health issues, very obvious drug issues, a lot of homelessness.
Dirty.
Yeah. And kind of a little bit scary as well.
Yeah, you know, we drove in last night and before the sunset, and we were already seeing problems, okay? And now we're downtown. We can walk to the beach from here. And I'll tell you what, I'd be checking my six when I'm walking around, because you got to have real situational awareness here, because there is so much homelessness. There are such obvious mental health issue people walking around, and the city is just dirty. And this is supposed to be a pretty high-profile California city.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to say because I don't know what happened to the city other than that, you know, this has always been a place that kids like to move when they leave home. Long Beach has always been one of those places where younger people hang out, and there definitely are a lot of those here right now. It's just that they're not upwardly mobile younger people. They're people that look like they're just letting life hit them in the face.
A lot of, you know, just, what is it called? Living for subsistence.
I mean,
that's it, subsistence living. That's the term I was looking for. You know, what I find disappointing is that the city really looks like it's trying to, you know, put a new face on itself. You know, I see some new building and everything, especially down by the waterfront. But I'll tell you what, unless they get rid of these problems or deal with these problems one way or another, it's not a city that really resonates with me. And that's unfortunate, because I really like Southern California beach cities.
It's got some great parts to it. It's still got the great Belmont Shores part. It's got some great restaurants in Long Beach.
No doubt about that.
It just definitely looks like it has a population of what reminds me, honestly, of Denver or San Francisco when we walk around there with a lot of homeless people on the ground and a lot of people begging and a lot of people that are, you know, unkempt or unclean, as you would say, and really you can tell that there's a lot of mental health issues and drug use going on around here.
You know, I really don't see a lot of cops driving around on the beat out here, and what really surprises me and kind of bothers me, because it's dangerous, is that, you know, like last night once it got dark, there's all sorts of these people, you know, riding bicycles and being in a wheelchair and doing this and doing that with no light clothing at all, no lights on anything, and they're just like in the middle of the street. And you got to watch out so you don't hit them or they don't run into you. And people just appear, from what I can see, oh, well, that's just what's going on here. And they just kind of drive around them or they do this or that. And I'm going, wow, you know, that's not what you really want to see in a city that's supposed to be sort of rebranding itself.
Well, and we went to dinner last night in a great little Italian restaurant, and it was right across the street from the ocean. And what was walking in front of that restaurant as we were eating was almost nothing but homeless people.
And weird people.
Yeah, strange people. There was a group of, you know, people that were in groups, a lot of people that were in groups, where if I was just walking down the street by myself, I would be concerned. And then when it got to be around 9 o'clock, then you saw the homeless people bedding down on park benches and on
in the sidewalk in front of the restaurant. In front of stores, there was homeless people with the, you know, with all their accoutrements and all of their worldly possessions in shopping carts. I mean, and just laying out in front of Vons, you know, the supermarket. I'm going, man, you know, I really don't feel comfortable about really even going in there. And, you know, we went to in front of CVS. We needed to pick something up at CVS, and there were two or three homeless guys there. And I, believe me, I was checking them out. And, you know, the ironic thing about California is here I am. I'm retired from law enforcement. I actually have a business here where we're teaching concealed weapons. And here I am, and I can't even carry concealed in California because my concealed carry license now, I had to give it up when we moved out to Texas. And my Arizona, my Texas, my 34 state CCW doesn't apply in California at all. So here's the guy teaching it, and he can't even carry. And I said, there you go. There's California. Another reason why we left.
Well, and all those other states that you mentioned, they all have reciprocal laws so that if you carry in one, you can pretty much carry in all of them, but not California.
So, but, you know, that kind of brings to mind, you know, something that we were talking about over dinner last night, and that is, you know, that new Democratic Socialist congressional candidate, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from the Bronx in New York City. And, you know, she's looking at maybe becoming a new congresswoman for the United States. And she is just an avowed socialist. And the thing that really bothers me about her, and I find quite disappointing, is that she doesn't know anything about what she's talking about. She really has no idea what socialism is all about. And just because you stick the name Democratic in front of socialism, those are actually, you know, in contrary to each other. So I just wanted to talk with you a little bit about that.
Well, the more interviews she does, the more people should be worried, because it's evident when they ask her questions that she doesn't know the answers. And it's evident also where her biases are in the answers that she does give, like when she said that the Israelis were occupying Palestinian lands. So she didn't say that they're living there. She says they're occupying. What I hear from her is a lot of what she is kind of regurgitating is not thought on her own. It's regurgitating somebody's lines that have given them to her, or that she's heard and she thinks are a cool idea, but she doesn't really understand the basis and the finances and all of the social repercussions about what she's talking about.
Well, and I think the thing that is also interesting, and I'd be honest with you, not surprising to me at all, is that when her ardent supporters are interviewed, they can't tell you what socialism is, number one. They have no idea what democratic socialism is, and neither do I, to be honest with you. But they don't know how all these free programs are going to get paid for. You know, the interviewers kept asking, well, are you in favor of free education for everybody? Oh, yeah, we're in favor of free education for everybody and free health care for everybody. Oh, well, absolutely, we need to have that. Social justice, we need to have, you know, free this and free that and this entitlement and that entitlement. And then when the key question is asked, well, how would we pay for that?
And they don't know. And of course, nobody knows, because it's really, other than revamping the entire system, our entire capitalist system here, and the way that we all earn money and the way that we all keep money or don't keep money, everything would have to be revamped. And as far as I understand, she's kind of in Bernie Sanders' corner, where you can have the 90% tax on the so-called rich, which we haven't put the number where the rich is, but the last you and I heard, I think, was 200 to 250,000 was rich. So At whatever point they decide to take 90% of your income and pass it out to everybody else, it's not going to get this country anywhere. This will be the biggest disaster. Of course, I don't think it's ever going to happen. But it was interesting, Ron, because with you and I walking around Long Beach today, and we're looking at all the people, and we're kind of talking about, well, if they took our money away from us, and they gave it to these people so that we have income equality.
Well, redistribution of wealth.
Well, exactly. They're calling it income equality because it sounds better to them. What would that bring those people? What would they do with that money? Well, I'll tell you what they would do with that money from looking at what I'm seeing here. They would do more of what they're doing, which is not a whole lot of anything, but they could probably get some more drugs. And they could probably maybe get a hotel to flop in, you know, sometimes. But they wouldn't want to change their life. It wouldn't bring their life up to where they say, gee, let me go out and get a job and make some money. Because, by the way, what would be the incentive to do that? Because they'll just get that money taken away from them.
Well, you know, that's the point. And the people that we are seeing, and I hate to stereotype, but, I mean, you know, in my business, I've been trained, you know, to look at people and to sort of get a good idea of what they're all about. And when you see these people, they're disheveled. They don't dress with any sense of respect. They're dirty. They're unwashed. Nobody's got a decent haircut, woman or man. And it just looks like all they're doing is just subsiding. I don't see the energy. I don't see the motivation. I don't see anything where I would be confident that if we gave those people money, that these people would say, you know what, I'm going to take this money and I'm going to build on this. I'm going to go get some education. I'm going to go to a trade school. I'm going to do something to help myself. Maybe I'm going to see a doctor. Maybe I'm going to get fixed up. Maybe I'm going to get well again so that I can move on. I'll use this money to bootstrap myself up so that I can make something of myself, get past the bad decisions I made in my life. You know, I didn't go to school. I got sucked up into drugs and alcohol and things like that. I don't see that going anywhere. And, you know, you and I have already spoken time and time again together, honey, about the horrible state of mental health that is in California and across the United States. So it just really bothers me.
Well, and it's very evident here. And I will say that even back in the day when I lived here, one of the reasons that I moved out, probably the biggest reason that I left this area at that time of my life, was because I always wanted to do something with my life. I wanted to get an education. I wanted to get a better job. I wanted to keep moving up in life. And I had aspirations for my future. I wanted to be able to get a home. I wanted to have my own space. I didn't see that with the people that lived here at that time, and I don't see it, that it's any different. In fact, I see that it's much worse. What they told me from their own mouths at that time was, we want to live on whatever we can get from the government and however we can survive, and we, you know, we don't mind sleeping on the beach, and we don't mind sleeping in maybe apartments that have 10, 12 people in it. But we just want to do, you know, they would have a lot of marijuana parties. They would have a lifestyle that wasn't, you know, indicative of where I wanted to go with my life. So I had no way to really relate to them, and nor they to me. And then I knew it was time to leave, you know. So I don't see it being any different. And to your point with socialism, making this redistribution of wealth would be disastrous, because you and I both know that unless people have a motivation to get up in the morning and do something, whatever that something is, I mean a real motivation in life, then life is pretty shallow.
And you know, I'm going to piggyback on that, because you and I have worked so hard together. You know, I mean, we've grown up separately. We both went to school. We both, you know, got involved in professions. We've advanced in our lives, and we've accomplished quite a bit, you know, both individually and as couples. And this whole redistribution of wealth thing, which is really Marxism, it's more than socialism, it's Marxism. You take from those that have and you give it to those that have not. That bothers me, because where's my incentive to get up in the morning and work? You know, where's that? If I get taxed 75% or 90%, then where is my motivation to continue to want to strive and to do well and to get, you know, to make more money or to have more accomplishments so I can, you know, move my life further, move into retirement, do more stuff with our kids, you know, do stuff with grandkids if we ever get any, you know, and things like that. Where's the motivation? You've killed it for me.
Well, and that is a huge part of human nature, is having motivation. And if you take that away from people, it just would be a really, I think, a really miserable existence. There are so many things that I think would happen from that, like dominoes falling, and none of them would be good. And, you know, these people that we're seeing that you want to give money to are not working 14 hours a day like you and I are. They're not, you know, kind of breaking their behind.
I wish I was only working 10 hours a day.
You know what? I have to say, you know, the other evening, well, you and I went home, not home because we're not home, but we went back to where we're staying, and it was still light outside. And we both commented on, wow, you know, this is really cool. We're actually leaving work when it's light outside.
And that never happens.
Yeah.
You know, and here we are, and today, which is a day off, and what are we doing? I've just spent the last 4 hours working.
As did I.
Okay.
But that's what we do, because we are motivated to do so. And because we have the ability in life, as all Americans do, to make their own rewards and to be rewarded for their efforts. And if you take that away from people, you have nothing with people. That's, you know, the sad thing.
And, you know, one of the things that really got me in watching the interviews of the people that are big supporters of Ocasio-Cortez, they're talking about, oh, these great socialist models. And the guy said, name one for me. And what about Venezuela? And the people would go, well, I don't know very much about Venezuela.
Right.
Well, you should know something about Venezuela, all right? It's got 1,000%. A million percent of inflation.
Right.
Okay? Well, what about all these other socialist companies? They're all in the tank, for God's sake.
And in Venezuela, I believe that the income has gone to $1 a month. Was that the
$1 a month?
A month.
No, $1 a month. Okay. And, you know, we were recently in Mexico, and we were asking, you know, for a basic laborer, how much do you think they make a day? And it was like $5. Okay, so even in Mexico, and I refer to Mexico not as a first world country, but sort of as a second world country, even Mexico has got 400% better standard of living than Venezuela.
Yeah.
Okay. So how's that? And they're not. And Mexico is really not a socialist country.
And the people in Mexico, though, are very, very industrious and willing to work. So they can make some decent money. But yeah, the socialism thing is not a winner.
And I'd agree with you. So much for democratic socialism. How about some of that hotel coffee?
You got it.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. On sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
So you spent part of the day today writing a brand new article for America Out Loud, and I really enjoyed reading it,
it's definitely a frost my socks moment. Anne Hathaway had come out with a tweet.
And that's the actress.
The actress. And talking about the very tragic murder of Leah Wilson that happened in the subway where she was stabbed by the white man. And she basically blamed that stabbing on white privilege and racism. But it's the white privilege. The whole racism conversation is annoying as it is, because everybody attributes everything that happens to racism. But the new Hollywood, whatever you want to call it,
mantra
is white privilege. And look who is even touting white privilege.
A person who's been white privileged all her life.
Yeah.
I mean, real white privilege.
But here's the thing that really gets me about this. She put this out on Twitter to everybody and accused it of being racism and white privilege, and that that black people are living in fear, and that white people have no concept of how these black people feel.
And by the way, the two black women that were killed on the Bay Area Rapid Transit subway train were black.
Okay.
And that's why this whole thing came about, from my understanding.
Right. They were, but this particular girl that was killed, Nia Wilson, she's an innocent 18-year-old girl with her sister there just waiting, and this man comes up and he stabs her and he kills her and injures her sister. Well, first of all, you don't take a tragedy and make it worse by saying something stupid like Anne Hathaway did. But here's the thing, Ron, that's stupid about it. I want to talk about white privilege for a moment, because I'm really upset about hearing this, and that it's this new little famous keyword that everybody's saying. My parents, my grandfather came from Holland. His wife had died. He had five kids. He came here. He literally shoveled poop, okay, to make a living for those kids. He fished. He shoveled coal. He did lots of different, very not glamorous jobs to support his kids. He brought up those kids, every one of them being a good person, and some of them being more successful than others, but all of them being good religious, good American family people. Okay, he was no privileged white person, nor were any of those kids, one of them being my mother. Okay, my mother worked during the war. She, then she raised five kids, stayed home. She was never a white privileged woman. My dad worked his fanny off to build a business. He did so. He was very successful at it. He built his own future for them, and they had a nice life. Later in life, he ended up losing all of that. He was not white privileged either. I've built my own company from the ground up with no help from anybody, no financial help, no help from anybody, and learning kind of through the school of hard knocks, and have been very successful at it. I am not white privileged. All of these people that I mentioned, Ron, built their own way in life. Nobody handed them anything, and I know that you have the same story in your family, where your family also, including yourself, built your own way and made your own successes. So don't talk to me that because I'm white that I have privilege. I have worked for it, and so have a lot of other people. And by the way, those opportunities are for everybody, regardless of your color in this country, because I can name you lots and lots of people that we know that are of all different races that have done the same thing. So let's not talk about white privilege.
And you know, America is singular in being one of the only countries in the world where people literally have that ability to realize what they refer to as the American dream, pull themselves up by their bootstraps and become phenomenal successes if they wish to, no matter what race, color, creed, religion, culture you come from.
Absolutely. The other thing that's really disturbing to me about what she says, besides the white privilege, she's talking about racism. You have to look at the picture of the white man that murdered Nia Wilson. He is obviously got some mental issues.
And his background is totally indicative of that, according to his mom.
Yes. He's bipolar and he's schizophrenic. And when you are schizophrenic, you can have a break from reality that causes you to not be in the same mental world that the rest of us are in.
Yeah.
And that probably is what happened to him. Now, can I say that no racism was involved? I don't know the man. I don't know what was in his mind or heart. But I do know enough about mental illness. By the way, having worked in a mental health facility at one time, a mental hospital, I do know that just by the look of him and by his actions that he definitely had some mental issues going on. So we're blaming racism and we're blaming white privilege for something that was obviously to me a mental health issue. And if you want to ignore those issues in life about what the real problem is that caused Nia Wilson to die, it was not that somebody didn't like her color. It was that somebody was mentally ill.
Delusional.
Did not Absolutely. Have the help to get off the street. Why? Why did he not have the help to get off the street? Because
we don't give them the help. It is the biggest, I've said this many times, 80% of my caseload of homicides are people with mental health issues that kill other people or are killed by them. Because they're so violent, and we do absolutely nothing in this country, and certainly this homicide took place in the San Francisco Bay Area of California, they do absolutely nothing to help these people.
No, and some years ago we stopped having the ability to institutionalize people. In fact, we closed a lot of our mental
in
institutions
the 60s.
At that time, and we said that we are harming their civil rights to be able to incarcerate people or institutionalize them for periods of time.
Right.
And what have we done? We put them on the streets to really have a downward spiral, and they have no help and they have no safety net, and this is what happens. And until we address that issue rather than this white privilege garbage and even the racism talk, then these things are going to keep happening. And these people who live in Hollywood in their bubble, who don't know what they're talking about because they are surrounded by security and they have no concept of how the real world lives and what we have and what we don't have, that they just need to kind of close their mouths and go act or sing or whatever they do.
No, they need to stay in their wheelhouse. You know, speaking of people that need to stay in their wheelhouses, and I'll tell you what, you and I are both country western fans. I love country western music. We go to Nashville. I mean, we are true followers. Something that completely disappointed me this week, and that is country western singer star Eric Church. Going off on Instagram or Twitter or whatever the heck he did. I think he did an interview with a magazine, as a matter of fact, and just blaming the entire Las Vegas mass murder, active shooter, situation with Stephen Pollock, who was the suspect, the sole suspect in that case, on the NRA. And that is absolutely ridiculous. As you know, I did the criminal psychological profile on Stephen Paddock, and no motive was ever developed, but there was nothing in my investigation that led me to reasonably conclude that the NRA had anything to do with the cause and effect of that horrible mass murder.
Well, again, it's just people that are speaking out that don't know what they're talking about, that really create more of a mess by what they're saying than helping a situation. And, you know, the thing in the case with Nia Wilson, a lot was made of that she is black and the perpetrator was white, and that's a fact. But I can name you, and I know that you even more than me can name any number of cases, Ron, where it's the opposite, where the murdered person is white and the murderer is black. So we can't, it's totally unfair to go there. And why is one more wrong than the other? We're all human beings and it's wrong no matter what. And in fact, if you want to look at statistics, it's a fact that more white people are killed by blacks than blacks by white. And it's a fact that the percentages are higher. But even what's a bigger fact, if you want to talk about about blacks being murdered and a concern about that, let's talk about the black on black crime, because 89.3% of all blacks that are murdered by other blacks. So these Hollywood people and the Eric Churches of the world, they just need to know what the heck they're talking about. And I'm wondering where they get their information to make these comments.
Well, you know, I don't know what's going on in their lives where they feel that they have to make these comments. Obviously, they've got the freedom to express, you know, their thoughts. But for God's sakes, you know, if you are celebrities and people pay attention to you for some reason, why don't you have the responsibility and the intelligence to be well informed, or at least better informed, on the backgrounds of these individual cases? In the case of Stephen Paddock, I can tell you demonstrably that the guy had a motive to kill as many people as he possibly could. I firmly believe that the motive was he had something against the gambling industry because he was a professional gambler and he'd lost, you know, millions and millions of dollars in those casinos. All right, this is a behavioral issue. Yes, did he have a lot of guns? He certainly had a lot of guns, but you know what else, Linda? He didn't have as much as a parking ticket. So every single one of those guns under the Second Amendment, he was allowed to buy. He didn't have machine guns, right? Now, if you want to talk about the buttstock issue that makes the gun shoot faster, that's fine. But the real issue is not the gun. It's the behavior of the person behind it. You know, just last year, we talked about that terrorist that got into a garbage truck on Bastille Day in Paris, near the Champs-Élysées, and mowed down 82 tourists and Frenchmen. Killed them all, for God's sakes. Would we blame that on garbage trucks, or do we blame that on behavior? So to me, Eric Church is extremely disappointing. And for him, if I was talking to him today, I'd say, Eric, I just got two words for you, Dixie Chicks. All right? Hey, look, I like your music, but I don't like it that much. And if you piss me off, guess what? I'm going to stop listening to your music, and I'm not going to go to your concerts because I just want to be entertained by you. I don't want to be lectured by you.
Well, and the same thing with Anne Hathaway, and I think, you know, she's pretty much off my list of anybody's movies that I want to watch, and it's a shame because she's a good actress, but they just live in these bubbles, Ron, where they don't live with the rest of us in the real world, and everything in life is not somebody else's fault. Sometimes things just happen, and you have to blame the person that caused it, but you can't blame everybody else.
Exactly.
And that's really a bad situation there.
You know, Linda, people that don't have any idea of what context is going on is this city council person, Melissa Schlag from Haddam, Connecticut, who takes a knee during the Pledge of Allegiance before the city council. It's just remarkable to me, these politicians and where they get the idea that they think that this is an appropriate thing to do. Look, people vote for these people to represent them, and I seriously doubt whether the majority of the people in the city of Haddam, Connecticut, wherever that is, want their city council person to embarrass the city and embarrass the city council and their constituents by taking a knee during the Pledge of Allegiance. And, you know, they talked with her, and people are up in arms in that town already, and they're asking her to resign. Actually, they're demanding her to resign. And, you know, when she was interviewed, she said, you know, I felt a little bit nervous when I did it, but then I felt so powerful. Powerful? Why and how would you feel so powerful about insulting our military, insulting our flag, insulting our country? And she said, well, you know, I did it because I don't like Donald Trump, and it's a protest against President Trump. Wait a minute, okay? What do you know about President Trump that is so horrific that you disrespect the entire country? And what bothers me about this, you know, you talked about Anne Hathaway. I spoke about Eric Church. We can talk about people like Melissa Schlag. Quit placing your values ahead of our values as citizens of the United States. Don't interject your politics into the city council meeting. Don't interject your politics into music. Don't interject your politics into acting, and use your place as a politician, or, as I said before, as a celebrity, whether you're an actor or whether you're a singer, and disrespect everybody when you don't know what the hell you're thinking or what you're talking about. It just bothers the heck out of me.
Well, I would definitely, if I were there, I would definitely vote her out of office, or I would, you know, put pressure on her to resign, because this whole take a knee thing is so un-American to me. And this still is the greatest country on the face of the planet, and people are not knowing that because we're losing context. As we're losing our aging population that have the context, it seems like the younger generation is not getting it. Now, I will say that even though I bag a lot on the millennial generation, I do see a lot of hope in it, especially in people like...
How about our kids? Our kids are all millennials.
Our kids. How about Aaron, our bull trainer? Just a good, solid young man. And so many more that I can think of.
And all our kids that are in the military, right? All our men and women that are in the military in faraway lands defending this country, also domestically defending this country. Look at all of our law enforcement people in the millennial generation that are fighting for this country and have given up their lives in the fight against criminality.
Right. And one thing that you and I mentioned today as we're walking down the street was a concern that if we ever were in a war and we're looking around us...
Where people invaded us?
Are these the people that are going to protect us?
I didn't see hardly anybody.
I do get
scared about that.
Yep.
And, you know, just one more frost my socks moment before we get another cup of coffee. And that is, you know, these people that are chanting, the new chant is America was never great. Right? They're burning the flag. They do this or do that. Not one of these people have left this country to go to someplace else. So if this country is not great, if you hate this country so much, then why the heck are you staying here? You should stand behind your own words and your own behavior, and you should get the heck out of this country. And that's how I feel about it.
I agree.
Coffee time.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Okay, well, Ronnie, are you ready for our inventions of the day?
I love the inventions.
They're just always amazes me, human ingenuity. So everywhere that we go, we see the solar panels, right? The big, giant solar panels on top of people's houses.
And we were talking about getting a couple to light up part of our backyard.
Yeah, well, they have just pioneered solar panels that are basically the size of a book. So in the future, your solar panels are not going to need to be these huge things on top of your house. They can actually, if you picture putting liquid into a bottle, you do it with a funnel, you get much more into the bottle much easier. And that's kind of what they're doing with the solar energy. It's being funneled at a 60% better rate into a smaller unit, and you will get just as much power. So I think that that's going to be a huge game changer with solar.
That's pretty incredible, because as everybody knows that you know, when you either own solar or you go past a house that's got it or a building, it does take up pretty much the whole roof on your house.
Yeah, and that will be no more. So that's a good game changer. The next one is kind of complicated, so I'm going to really dumb it down just for myself because I'm not a medical kind of person.
Oh, you meant you're going to dumb it down for me.
No, I'm not going to dumb it down. No, you're much smarter than I am.
I'm offended by that, Linda.
but ultrasound waves can be applied to the brain to be a treatment for dementia. This is a new process that they're just coming out with, and Japanese scientists have found that by applying these ultrasound waves, which are low-intensity pulsed ultrasound, which go by the acronym of LIPUS or LIPUS, to the brains of mice and other animals, can improve the blood flow in those areas. So the parts of the brain that are damaged by dementia, that are not getting blood flow any longer, it opens it all up. And they've done several different experiments as to doing it localized or doing it through the whole brain. And they've found so far that doing it through the whole brain is the best. But they really feel like this is going to make a huge impact on dementia.
Well, boy, I'll tell you, that really resonates for me because, as you know, my mom suffered from dementia before she passed away. And it was so sad to see that and also Alzheimer's. When people experience that, and they're such brilliant people like my mom was, and they're losing it and they can't remember. Now, she didn't have Alzheimer's, thank God. She only had dementia, but it was tough. It was tough on her, and it was tough on the family. So I'm glad that they're moving forward with some things to help people with that horrible disease.
And they're moving forward rapidly because the first clinical trials are already underway.
Well, I can guarantee you I'll be following that in the future.
Another medical breakthrough, which I'm really excited about, is that human trials for artificial kidney could begin this year and start being implanted by 2020. And again, this is way too complicated with big words to go into, but very basically they've been able, where they hadn't been before, to solve the problems of filtering your blood well enough through the kidney so that you don't get blood clots, which is traditionally been the problem with anything artificial.
Or have to go through so many hours of dialysis a couple of times a week.
And this is what they're preventing. So right now they have a working model that seems to be going to work, and they are actually in trials as we speak. And this could save just thousands and thousands of, first of all, hours of
dialysis.
And also thousands of people's lives, because, you know, when their kidneys fail, there aren't enough transplants for the kidneys. There's a huge waiting list.
Now, is this going to be introduced into the body, right? So this is not external. It's going to be internal.
It's going to be internal.
For surgery.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes, it's amazing. And by the way, there's one more. I haven't read up on it, but I'm absolutely fascinated by it. There are tens of millions of people in the world, Ron, who have cornea problems. They're either damaged in some way,
sure,
or they get infections or diseases.
Our good friend Bob just had a double cornea transplant, remember, last year? And he turned out amazing. He can see better, he said, than as if he was a kid again.
And he was extremely lucky to be able to get that transplant, because there is a huge waiting list again for corneas. They kind of don't grow on trees, right? Well, now they can develop the cornea, basically.
And this is this an artificial cornea?
Well, it's part artificial and part real materials made out of your stem cells, and they can develop the cornea, and they can 3D print it and insert it, and this will completely dissolve the waiting list of people waiting to get their eyes fixed. And these are serious things where people can go blind or already are blind, and they can just, this is up and coming very, very soon. I think that was a really exciting medical breakthrough.
I'll tell you what breakthrough, and we've talked about this a couple of times, as a matter of fact, Invention Girl, you've brought it up, and that is this whole issue of 3D printing. Isn't it just amazing? You know, you're talking about maybe corneas, and we talked about the 3D printing of houses,
right,
and bones. I think
one
of our conversations, mm-hmm, you were talking all about the 3D printing of bones. A guy like me that's got bad knees, believe me, my ears are open. I'm listening to everything you tell me.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, I think that they've only scratched the surface of what they can do with the 3D printing, and I think that we're going to be seeing more and more things. I'm just amazed at how fast they've come up with these solutions. This is just, it's light years ahead of where I thought we would be at this point.
Well, I think the scientific community, I don't think they get enough credit for the amazing work that they do. And many of these scientists are actually very, very young people. And so I'm just so gratified by the tremendous work that our medical scientists do and our engineers as well. Well, hey, Lindy, are you ready for a little bit of good news?
I love good news.
I've got a couple of great good news stories. And the first one involves Chadwick Boseman. Do you know who he is? He's the guy that is the actor that plays that new Marvel comic superhero Black Panther.
I did see him. Haven't seen the movie, but I did see him.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm not totally into the whole superhero thing, but I saw some of the outtakes about the Black Panther. I saw a couple like on LinkedIn or something, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to go to that movie and I'm going to go see this guy. But anyway, so he recently, I guess he did so good in that movie and it's got such great reviews that he was up for an MTV award recently. And so he goes to the award show, and which of course is, you know, done nationally, you know, so everybody can watch it on TV. But who does he invite to the award show but James Shaw Jr. And you and I have talked about James Shaw Jr. because he is the citizen that was in the Waffle Hut, I think it was in Tennessee, when that active shooter came by with that AR-15 rifle and started shooting up the place. And Jim Shaw, who's a black guy, that's why the whole Black Panther thing is going on, right? And he put himself in between those people, and he jumped that guy, and he grabs the barrel of the gun, literally burned his hands on the barrel of the gun because it was so hot, and then took a grazing wound during the course of that and disarmed that guy and saved all those people. Well, what Chadwick Boseman did is he had him kind of sit in the front row, and of course, James Shaw is saying, hey, this is pretty cool. I get to go to the show and watch this. Thanks for the invitation. And all of a sudden, he said, and I thought this was an amazing gesture, and he says, you know, I want to thank everybody in the industry for giving me this MTV award for being a superhero, but I'm a fake superhero. We've got a real superhero right here in the auditorium. And he asked James Shaw Jr. to stand up. And of course, we've seen him on interviews before, and he just couldn't be more humble.
Yeah, he's
a
shy guy.
A little embarrassed. He stands up, but he's smiling and he waves to the crowd and he gets applause. They didn't really know who he was. Most of them didn't. And then Chadwick Boseman says, hey, this is the guy from the Waffle Hut that saved all those lives. He's a real superhero. And he asked him to come up to the stand. And when he got up to the podium, Chadwick Boseman handed him his MTV award.
Yeah, that's absolutely great. Yeah. And nobody is more deserving. And there's a guy who kind of realizes that he is an actor and that there are real life heroes out there, and wanted to put that award where in the hands that it really belongs. So good for him.
Well, I've got something else which is good news and kind of funny news at the same time. And this is in Halifax, Virginia. And people are driving down the roadway, and all of a sudden they see the lights and the siren of a police car behind them, and they pull off to the side of the road. And of course, you're all nervous and everything because you got the black and white fever, and you see the pull your car over to the side of the road, and you see the cop walking up, and so everybody's all nervous and everything. And the police officers, who happen to be officers Kevin Land and Brian Warner of the Halifax Police Department, they came up and they said, hey, do you know why we stopped you? And of course, everybody's like, I don't know. I think I was driving okay. What did you stop me for? And they said, well, we stopped you for a violation of the Virginia Vehicle Code 1739. And they're going, well, what is that? And it's an actual vehicle code section from many, many years ago, probably put in there as a joke, that people, when they're driving their cars, have got to have an ice cream cone in their hand.
Really? That's a real thing?
I don't know. Maybe they made it up. So anyway, it's a good icebreaker, so to speak. And the people, when they're going, what? all of a sudden the partner comes up with one or two ice cream cones, whoever's in the car, and he hands them the ice cream cones. And I just thought that was kind of funny because, you know, the police are nice guys and they're just trying to get along a little bit with the community. I know a while back you and I did a story about the police getting an ice cream truck and going in through neighborhoods and giving kids ice cream cones.
Right.
So yeah. It just kind of shows, you know, our law enforcement guys aren't as officious as people think they are.
They're human.
They're human, okay. and they like to do fun things. So yeah. I just thought I'd share that with
you. Well, here's speaking of a fun thing. There was a young man, 21 years old, that took a unicycle and went completely around the world. He went 21,000 miles for charity, and his name was Ed Pratt. And he raised $393,000 for the School in a Bag charity, which gives school supplies and educational equipment and so forth to disadvantaged kids around the world. So can you picture going on a unicycle around the whole world, 21,000 miles?
That's just, where do you put all your gear? I guess you got a big backpack that you're carrying on the back of that thing.
I guess so. The trip actually, he set out in 2015. And it took him 40 months, and that was 16 months longer than he had hoped. But because of weather conditions, he couldn't always, you know, ride.
So, I'm trying to figure out how he's going to ride up some of the hills that you have to ride up, you know, going across the United States, especially around the Continental Divide.
Yeah, I don't know. He went across Europe, Asia, New Zealand, Australia, the USA, and ended up in England. So kudos to him. He raised a bunch of money for a really good cause, but that's a long time to be gone on a unicycle.
I hope he saved up a lot of money.
I hope he sits on a pillow right now. I don't know. So do you remember the time that we were in Mexico and we were in a taxi and the taxi took us back to our condominium and you seriously overpaid him? Do you remember that?
Oh, I thought it was giving him a 50, because it was dark and I wasn't wearing my glasses, and I thought I gave him a 50 peso note, but I gave him a 500 peso note, which is a lot of money for a cab drive.
And he was ready to drive away.
Yes.
Without saying a word.
Absolutely.
And
I was a little bit embarrassed and pissed.
I stopped him and said, "Excuse me." And we got our money back.
And that's why I'm married to you.
And paid appropriately. I'm always watching the dollars run. Well, there was a tourist in China and he was a Chinese-American tourist, and he was in a taxi, and he also overpaid because he thought that the fare was a 65 yen fare, or yuan, however you say that word.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was 65, he paid 6,500. So that would be the equivalent of, if it was $9.50, he paid $950 for his cab ride.
So that guy's set for retirement in China.
Well, the driver took the money, and then he realized that the guy had really overpaid him, and he asked the cab company, you know, how could they get a hold of him? And this was the cab driver. Because the tourist never realized that he overpaid him.
Oh, okay.
And the cab driver went to extraordinary methods, and his name was Zhang Pan, and he called the hotel, and he described the guy, explained what happened, and they called the man's room, and he met the man, and he gave him back his money, and he wouldn't take a reward. And, you know, it's just really, really cool, because when that happened to us, we would never have gotten our money back. But here's a guy who was really honest, and that's a great thing. So another thing that I know that you and I saw just recently was goats, and lots of goats.
Well, our neighbors all have goats.
Well, our neighbors have goats, and for the same reason, and we saw them in Temecula, California, and they were eating the hillsides and all of the dry brush,
right,
that was
people
around.
Using them as mowers, basically.
Right, using them as mowers. And what it does is it really helps save on mowing and on hiring people, and it feeds the goats. Well, having those goats around, if you really think about it, right now we're in a huge wildfire season in California.
Oh, you know, just to digress for a second, you know, my lifelong friend from, I mean, when we were little kids together, Joe McCarthy, up in Redding, California. They had that huge fire, over 100,000 acre fire, and he called me just last night and told me that his house burned to the ground, and he and his wife lost everything. So they're having huge problems up north of here.
Huge problems. Well, some of those areas around San Francisco and Portugal and some other places in the world, but
in
particularly
Greece?
Particularly in California, the area up around San Francisco.
No, past, way past. It's almost at the Oregon border.
They use goats.
Oh, I get it.
To keep that brush down. And it's just absolutely a proven method, Ron, that the goats eat really, really close to the ground.
They do.
And they keep that brush down. And if we could employ more of those goats, it would do several things environmentally. I mean, it would certainly help so that we don't have these raging brush fires like we have now. And it feeds the goats. And, you know, I mean, that's just nature. So I know the Portuguese government are instituting using them really a lot. And I think that California would do well to do the same.
Well, you know, the Portuguese are famous as sheep and goat herders. And they hire themselves out. I know this in California, being in the ranching world, is that they hire, you know, Portuguese you know, sheep herders and goat herders to go out and to clear exactly that, especially the goats, because the goats will climb anywhere. The sheep won't necessarily do that,
right.
But the goats, as you know, are very sure-footed and a different hoof system and everything, and they can go in all sorts of places that really sheep wouldn't go, that where the high grass and the weeds need to be cleaned out.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm always amazed at how fast they mow an area. I mean, literally in a day, it's completely to the ground, and they move on to another area. So I think that they're pretty valuable. So I have another happy story.
Okay, go ahead.
In India, you know, in India, they have a very intensive academic curriculum, right? They are very much into education. They put a lot of pressure on their students there. And a lot of times, you can't get into colleges or universities unless you have a 98% score or higher.
Ooh, that's a lot of pressure.
That is really pressure. So, you know, what they've realized, which I absolutely love, what they've realized is that if the person is going through their educational system for 18 years of their life, and they're becoming an engineer or a civil servant or a technician or whatever they do, but they're still throwing litter on the ground or engaging in corruption, can we say that the system is really working? And they've come up and added to their curriculum happiness classes. And that may sound kind of funky, but not really, because what they're taught in those happiness classes is about mindfulness and self-care rather than math and science and things like that. So they are now focusing on the person and not just the subject and the education. And I think that that's really a great thing. And I think all schools would do well to do that.
Well, I think everybody would benefit when we had more well-rounded people, not all the I got mine or it's all about me people. Well, are you ready to call it an evening?
I guess I am.
All right.